Welcome to Where to Ski with me, your host, John Morgan. Today we're in Aspen, Colorado, the king of American ski towns. Grab your skis and let's dive into the world of skiing in Aspen. My guest today grew up, lives, works, and skis in Aspen. He also skis mountains all over the world. Steve Marolt is a native Aspenite. Together with his brother Mike, he's led over 50 ski mountain expeditions all over the world, skiing where no man has skied before. Down 8,000-meter mountains like Mount Everest in Nepal, Illimani in Bolivia, and Mostaghata in China. Inducted as the first ski mountaineers into the Ski Hall of Fame in 2017, they always come home to Aspen. Founded as a mining town in the 1880s, Aspen has been legendary in the ski world for its skiing, its parties, dining, shopping, and culture. 4 hours driving west from Denver and accessible by air, Aspen is easy to get to but does not have the day skiers found in other areas close to Denver and the Front Range. It's a small town with a mammoth reputation due to its four mountains. Aspen Mountain, commonly known as Ajax, Aspen Highlands, Snowmass, and Buttermilk. Especially exciting this year is the Heroes expansion of Aspen Mountain, about a 20% bump in skiable terrain and the first big expansion in many years. Aspen hosts celebrities, actors, politicians, World Cup skiers, families, and individual skiers of all ages and experience levels looking for some of the best, most consistent skiing on the planet. So, Steve, thank you for joining us today. Let's talk Aspen. Okay. I grew up in the East. Aspen was that magical place the good skiers went to. You grew up there and you still live there. You must have a very different view of Aspen.
You know, Aspen is just a part of my soul. It's a part of my identity. And, you know, I went away for a few years and went to school out on the West Coast and worked for a big accounting firm out on the West Slope and West Coast. And it was everything I could do to get back here. When I left here, I just knew I wanted to come back. You know, it's a pretty special place.
I went to school at CU, and a lot of the people that I met there from Aspen, everyone knew each other. Has that really changed a lot? There's been a lot of growth.
You know, that definitely has changed. Especially, you know, there was a dynamic that occurred that I think was slowly occurring and would have occurred anyways, but it got accelerated with COVID. You know, I'll bitch and complain about, you know, none of my friends live here anymore, but I'll walk to the store to get something for lunch, or I'll walk through town and you always bump into three or four people. You know, there's no such thing as a 10-minute walk for me in Aspen. You're always bouncing into people. But the thing that's kind of cool lately with the transformation that this town has gone through is that those meetings now, they're more meaningful. You know, you realize everybody that lives here realizes that you know, the tide has changed and it's different, and you really kind of cherish those normal small town meetings. You know, walking through town, it's a small town, John. It's a tiny little town. You know, with the core group. The core population, it hasn't changed, you know, that much, you know, since I've been here, you know, and I'll be 59 in a few days, and the size of it hasn't changed, but the second homeowners that live here have kind of ballooned the population out. It's not, you know, it's not technically counted in the population, but they're here and they're spending more time. And to see your familiar face from the core people that you grew up with and that have moved in here and that you've gotten to know, it takes on a different meaning now for me personally.
I get it. And, you know, some of it's just knowing them over time. Yes. The traffic's gotten worse though. Last time I was there, oh my goodness, it was getting around town in the winter is a little more challenging than it used to be.
Well, if you're here at high season, the traffic congestion's pretty bad, no doubt about it. And One of the dynamics with the escalating cost of real estate is that most of the worker bees have been pushed down valley, to as far as 50, 60 miles down valley. And there's only one way to get here, and that's in your car. So those people are commuting now, whereas years ago, when people were living in the core part of the town, they were riding their bikes or walking or getting around. So the fact that we've turned this destination resort into a commuter workplace, that's definitely had impact over the last 20 years for certain.
That's interesting. And that's not a unique challenge to Aspen, but I know you and your family have done a fair amount to try and alleviate some of the problem where you can. I've read about the Morrill Ranch, and there's some stuff that individuals like you that care about the town can actually do to try and help a little bit.
Well, really my dad, when he was born and raised here as well, and he was in the ski business and very passionate about skiing and incredibly passionate about this place, Aspen. He held public office at different times and tried to do his part to make it better. But it's pretty ironic, John. He was a very pro-developer politician. And I remember shortly before he passed away, at the young age of 68, we were at a picnic and we're looking around and there's bulldozers and work trucks and every street was torn up and just a lot of construction going on. And he looked at me when we got to the picnic, which was up at this beautiful place called the Maroon Bells. He looked at me and he said, "You know what? Enough is enough. Enough is enough." And I am quite certain that if he were living today, he wouldn't be terribly happy with what was inevitable. I don't think anybody could have stopped what has happened here, and it's no different than in Vail or Steamboat or Telluride or other communities back east. I'm sure the dynamic is probably pretty similar. You live in a desirable place, people are going to want to come here, and there's more people on the planet now, and there's just more people coming into these places. So
And you're right, the pandemic changed a lot of the construct. People moved. People wanted to go to places where they wanted to be as opposed to the cities.
yeah, but you know what? That's kind of interesting. That's an interesting point, because the student roles at the schools and stuff like that, they exploded because people wanted to get out of the cities and move to places like Aspen. And you're thinking, whoa, this is going to be huge. There's going to be a lot of people living here. And I think basically we're creatures of habit. And as soon as things calm down and we got a grip on what was happening with that pandemic, most of those people went back home. And home is home. And it's the school rolls have shrunk. They've shrunk to the point where now it's gone the other way, because people can't find housing here and people are moving out because the cost of living is so great in a place like Aspen, that the school districts, who are funded on a per capita basis, they're starting to feel the squeeze, because those people have by and large moved back to, or they, I think they've moved back to their homes. I think that's where they've gone. But I know that those people we thought were going to be more permanent, they've gone away.
Well, that's interesting. So let's get back to town shortly, but let's talk a little bit about the skiing. Each of the four mountains in Aspen, they're really different. They've got a different character, they ski differently, and they're for really different targeted skier. On any
Yes.
given trip, it's fun to ski two or three different mountains. We'll probably talk about them all separately. So let's start with Ajax, or what most people call Aspen Mountain. It rises right at a town. I mean, you're right there. It just stares you in the face. You can get the gondola right off Durant Street. It's got some incredible skiing, and it's probably the glitziest of the four. It's the one that always shows up. It always shows up in the ads and everything else. I mean, it's sort of the key mountain at Aspen is Aspen Mountain.
Well, Aspen Mountain is by far and away the best mountain I've ever skied on. And you stop and you think about it, it's not a huge mountain. It's actually a pretty small mountain, but it really skis like a large mountain, and every part of it is a different type of skiing. I call it the shrine. I worship the shrine. I'm looking right up at Aspen Mountain from my office right now. I've spent a lot of hours on Aspen Mountain, and they'll call Highlands the locals mountain, and it's but the people that grew up here and that really understand how to ski that mountain and what that mountain is all about and what it represents and the history on the mountain, it's just a special hill. It really is. John, I extend that to the summer, hiking up it and running around, riding mountain bikes up it. And it's just when I'm on that mountain, I it's that is a part of my identity, that mountain in particular. That's where I ski 99% of the times that I go up skiing when I'm when I'm skiing Aspen. So
Well, and
it's a
you're a good
cool
skier,
place.
and Aspen is not for the faint of heart or for the beginners.
No, it's a hard mountain to ski, but I mentioned earlier that you have to learn how to ski that mountain. I just had lunch with a friend of mine, and he's like, I'd go skiing Aspen Mountain, and he lives out at Snowmass, and I skied Aspen Mountain, I skied all of them, and I really didn't care for Aspen Mountain, and then I started skiing it with you, and you know how to ski it, and it turns that small mountain into an enormous mountain with just nooks and crannies and gullies and chutes and rocks. And he said that I see why you and some of the buddies that you grew up with in Aspen, I see why you like that mountain, why you prefer that mountain. So it's just a
So
cool thing.
tell me how you ski Aspen, without giving any away trade secrets, but you're right, it does ski differently. There's different parts and different places. You've got groomers when you go off to the right at the top that are fun to warm up on. There's FIS, there's that you take the FIS and you got that whole side to ski. You've got, I think it's bachelors on the left when you're going up. And I mean, there's so many different places you can go and so many different types of terrain you can hit. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, you've got it's basically the you've got the east side, which is the North Star jackpot side of the mountain. Then in the middle, you've got Bell Mountain, which is none of it is extreme skiing like you'd see at Alta or Taos or Jackson Hole or Squaw Valley. Those places have some really gnarly steep skiing. Where I like to say about those ski areas, there's more than a dozen ways to kill yourself on those mountains. You really could kill yourself on those mountains. Aspen Mountain, those areas have just really solid, sustained steep skiing. A lot of bump skiing. If you're going to ski Aspen Mountain, you better learn to like bumps, because it's a bumpy mountain. Because it is small, and the concentration of skiers is on less acreage than a Jackson Hole or an Alta, which are huge mountains. But it's good long, 1,500 foot sustained steep skiing. And then they're all interconnected with these gullies. And then over on the west side, where you've got the Aztec Ruthie side, it's known as the Ruthie side, you've got some of the best, I would say, advanced to expert cruising in the entire valley. So you've got a combination where if you want world-class cruising. You can go top to bottom world-class cruising, but in the same breath, you can go top to bottom, 4,000 feet of long sustained steep skiing, and it's all connected. You can jump out of one end to the other, or vice versa at any time, which really made, that's why it skis like such a huge mountain.
I love that side where with Ruthie's and Aztec on it. I mean, Aztec is amazing. You come off the top and it's like, okay, the whole world falls out and there you are.
Oh,
And
it's
you
a
can
fun
put
run.
some, it is really, it's just delightful over there.
Yeah, you can lay it over. You can lay over your edges on Aztec. That's for sure.
What about on the mountain past the skiing? I think we've done a pretty good job on that one. Do you ever spend time hanging out on the mountain, or do you go up, ski, and then just bail out and go into
You
town?
know, I used to be one of those guys that would go up, and I'd be the first one on and the last one off. And it's funny. My dad would always be going up about, 2:30 in the afternoon, and I'd always look at him and say, I'd ask him, why do you just go up for a few runs, and why do you go in the afternoon? Why don't you ever go in the morning? We laugh about it. His coined response was, "Oh, I like to go up in the afternoon when the snow is cold." And that was his ultimate brush off. But as my skiing has developed, John, and I'll couch it by saying I enjoy skiing more today than I've ever enjoyed it in my entire life. But it consists of going 6 or 7 days a week. But I'll go up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'll get two gondola runs top to bottom, and I find that when I go up all day, my body hurts, I get tired, I get stiff, I get sore. If I go up for just those two runs, I'm getting 7,000, 8,000 vertical feet of hard skiing, and I enjoy it more now. And and it kind of goes to another thing that my dad used to tell me was, and this is wisdom from years and years of skiing that is true, that I find it true for me. He always said, if you really love skiing, you should never leave the mountain not wanting another run. If you've skied to the point where you say, "I'm done, I'm smoked, I couldn't ski another run," you've gone too far. So you always want to leave the mountain wanting one more run. And that two runs, 6, 7 days a week, that satisfies that. I think one of the reasons I like it more now is I don't, when you go up all day, whether you're 20 or you're 50, that's painful. That it's hard on your body. That sport's hard on your body. And if I go up for, two buckets, I just always leave wanting another run, and I feel good.
I hear you. I have kids that will ski all day, but I go up, I take my runs, and then I sit and go somewhere, find somewhere for lunch. I'll go up early because I like the morning snow, but I'll go up,
Yeah.
take the runs, and then I'm done. That's okay. I've
Yes.
got another day and I want to go the next day. You're right. Your dad was right about that. I love that.
He was spot on. It's kind of funny.
So, do you ever go to Buttermilk at
Yeah,
all?
I didn't go to Buttermilk for years, and then I had three kids, and they've all grown up since then. But Buttermilk, and in particular that Tyhack part of Buttermilk, there's some amazing terrain in there. It's not extreme. They buff those runs out, so you can really, you can go up there and try to make the best World Cup GS turns, and or go straight. But we used to kind of laugh at it and kind of poo-poo Buttermilk. But then my kids got me to go over there, and and there's never crowds over there. It's always quiet. It's kind of a throwback to, when I was learning how to ski, because I learned primarily how to ski at Buttermilk. I'd go out there with my with my buddies when I was really young, and it's a throwback to that, and it's just got a nice old school feel to it, and the terrain is really, really pretty spectacular over there.
I used to end up, this is a while ago, I would end up at Buttermilk, oh, probably 3 or 4 days a year. And I was always surprised because it is well cut. The trails, they did a really good job cutting the trails. You can ski anywhere and find some good terrain.
Oh, and there's terrain changes, and each one of those runs is just a little different from the other one. And it's I've had and I will go out there now. Now I you know they kind of lit my fire. If I I'm running out of time, or if I've got friends that come to town, and they're intermediate skiers, I'll go out there. And I enjoy Buttermilk. Tyhack especially. Tyhack's a really it's just got a cool vibe to it.
And you said, like you said, that's the place for people to go that don't want to get stuck on Aspen. People that don't have a lot of experience that are just starting. It's a great place to learn.
It's a great place to learn, and it's a great place for older people. Klaus Obermeyer, that's a guy that would ski, 100 days. He'd ski every day. And Klaus is, I think somebody told me Klaus is 102 or 103, and I don't know if he's going to be able to go skiing this year, but he has skied up until last year. And he goes over there, and I my elderly mother used to go to Tyhack, and they just feel safer. There's not as many people. The biggest risk to those elderly skiers is getting hit by somebody. It's not falling, it's getting hit by somebody. And you go out there in the afternoon, it's quiet, it's slow paced. You don't have the guys straight lining all over the place. And it's good for beginners as well. It's good for everybody, John, but it's ideal for beginners and people like that.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about the other extreme on the age, and I probably at some point should. I'll try that next time I'm out there. I may take some runs there. Be
Yeah,
good.
it's pretty. You get over onto that kayak area. There's some really good terrain out there.
So I've spent a fair amount of time in Aspen, and I didn't ski snowmass a lot. I'd skied it a few times. I was very localized skiing because I was out there racing and they'd do an event there or something like that. But I got the opportunity to ski it with two of your uncles and one of your cousins about 2 years ago. I had no idea. That place is amazing. It's huge. It's
Oh, it's
huge.
enormous.
I think Bud was
There's a
telling me.
lot of terrain there.
Bud was telling me you could fit five or six Aspen Mountains onto snowmass into the mountain.
I don't think that's an exaggeration, John. I mean, there's a lot of acreage over there.
It's got some amazing skiing. I mean, it's got something for everybody. It's got those fast groomers and the slope work is amazing. Those cats are doing amazing jobs over there. And then you can go up and get into glades. Again, you're into the terrain that's amazing. And you get the views of the top of Maroon Bells, which is just also stunning.
Oh, it's incredible. When I'm in training mode for my expeditions, that's the mountain that I train on. And when I mean train, that's the one I'll walk up, because you can walk up, and then you've got that whole area above the cirque that's above timberline. And not a lot of people know it, and I wouldn't suggest you do this without somebody that knows the area, but you can go up the Pama up there above the cirque, and those gates are all open, and you can ski off the backside into the Snowmass Wilderness area, and you can gravity back onto the ski area, which th there's th you could I mean it's not something that I think they advertise, and it's not something that if you don't know that terrain and you don't know the snowpack, It's not something that I would suggest you want to do because you could get killed back there in an avalanche. It's major avalanche areas back in there, but there are safe routes, and I've skied those safe routes. And it's unique because you can get a true backcountry experience, and you can gravity right back onto the ski hill down below, and it's pretty cool. And the terrain back up there beyond the gates is, even if you just go back, walk back and climb up some of those peaks back there, the most stunning views in all of Colorado that I've seen. It's amazing.
I was, like I said, I was skiing with your uncles who know how to ski. They're getting up
Oh,
there a
yeah.
bit, but they were taking me some places that were just, we had to stop, take pictures every 5 minutes because we're looking out over some of the finest mountains in Colorado and just untouched.
Oh, Snowmass is amazing that way. And, it's amazing. It's just vast and large. I think the designers of Snowmass, they had, I think it was really challenging to, for where they placed the lifts and how they service such an enormous area. It's actually pretty genius the way they've done it. It's not perfect, but, it's always easier to look at something after it's been done and find a better way to do it. And I think that there are probably situations where they could have placed lifts differently, but given the magnitude of what they had to do when they designed that and built it, it skis amazingly well.
I was just shocked. Again, like I said, I had no idea, and I was so pleased after the days I skied there. I was like, wow, this is moved right up the top or near the top of my list and
Yeah,
anywhere in the
no,
country.
I can believe it. I believe it.
Now,
It's
talk about.
difficult for a local to get out there. My friends that live out there, that it's a lot easier for them, but I don't want to say it's difficult. If I were on vacation, you'd do it. But if you live here, it's just so much easier to get to one of the mountains in town. I primarily ski Aspen, a little bit at Buttermilk and quite a bit at Highlands, but it's kind of hard to get out there. Not from a tourist sense, but from a convenience. I like to ski and I have to work, so it's hard for me to get out there because if you go to Snowmass, it's so big, you're the way you ski that mountain is you plan on spending a full day out there, adventuring around.
Yeah, it's like a 20-minute drive out of town. How do the buses work? Does that work pretty well?
Well, the bus system is amazing in the Aspen area. Yeah, I talk to people all the time that come and visit here, and they rent a car, but you really don't need one. You
Okay.
really don't need a car. The bus systems, they're frequent. They got hundreds of buses, and it's amazing. If you park your car, it's actually easier to get around than if you're trying to drive and park and use your own transportation.
You started talking for a minute about Highlands. Again, it's always referred to as the locals' mountain. It's got some pretty amazing stuff there. You can start with a bowl up there, which on a good day is really just world-class skiing, but you got to hike for it. And
Yeah,
then
you got to earn it.
there's chutes. You got Olympic Bowl. There's all sorts of stuff there that is really good skiing. And I think there's even skiing for some of the for like intermediate skiers, not just the experts. It's an amazing spot, and that's where a lot of the pro racing was, which I was involved with.
Right. Well, Highlands is either on the extreme side of extreme skiing, or it's really good intermediate skiing. And there is some beginner skiing up on that mountain, but it's not cliff skiing and chute skiing like you'd get at a place like Squaw Valley or Jackson Hole. But it is some of the longest sustained extreme skiing in existence. That Highlands Bowl is is a sustained 40 degree, probably average 40 degree pitch with spots approaching 50 degrees. And, you know, I think the Highlands Bowl from the sustained skiing is about 1500 or 1600 feet of vertical skiing. And it's mind blowing. It's just amazing.
That's a lot of turns without a break. Take a breath.
Well, I'll tell you, John, you
go.
Stop in the middle of, you know, there, you know, unfortunately it's got a tragic history in terms of the number of people that have been killed in it. And if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Before the ski patrol, you know, patrolled that area, people would poach that. And, you know, you look at it and it's like, you know, I got quite a bit of experience. I think twice going in it on a big powder day now alone. You know, it is safe because they've got some of the world's foremost snowpack experts over there patrolling it and controlling it. So it is safe, but nonetheless, you know, I'll ski a lot up there alone and on a big dump. You know, you just stop and look around and you think, what would happen if this, you know, 12 or 18 inches started moving, you know, and it's steep enough where it could start moving. You think about it, it's a wild place. It's a wild place, that Highlands Bowl.
They work on it very hard. You're right about the patrol. They pack it out. They all boot pack it every beginning of every winter until it gets too hard to do. And hopefully that helps some of it.
Well, but that's the key to it. The key to opening that terrain. And there was a point before they opened it where about half the experts said they could control it, and about half said they could never control it. And what they found is that the key is to get in there in the powder and boot pack it. So what they'll do, and it's become kind of a, it's got a cult following. They'll give some free ski passes to locals who go up there and boot pack that when it's unskiable. They start packing that thing out, packing that snowpack out, mostly in the known, you know, starting zones up there. They'll get them up there boot pack. They're up. I'm sure they're up there boot packing today. A band of local hooligans working for their turn.
Probably. Where else do you ski at Highlands? When you go to Highlands, what's your favorite type of day over there? Or a few runs, your 2 hours.
I'll tell you what. It's hard to ski Highlands for more than 2 hours because the terrain is so demanding. If you hike that bowl and you go up and you do that, if you do that 3 or 4 times, you're smoked. You know, that there are guys that'll go up there and do it more than that, but you know that becomes more an endurance activity than a skiing activity. But you go up there and ski the Highlands Bowl and then shoot over to, you know, the Ole Bowl side and ski a couple of runs in there. It's demanding. And it just becomes a workout because those runs are super long. They're super demanding, you know, down below the bowl and in the Olympic side, the bumps get ginormous in those runs. And super steep, very hard technical skiing. You know, I'll go up. Typically, I'll go up. I'll do a bowl lap. I'll come up that deep temerity lift, and then I'll shoot over to the Olympic side. Maybe come up and do one down Sodbusters or Kessler's Ridge or the Nose. And I'm always trying to ski those runs nonstop. You know, to get the workout, and it's really a challenge. If you can ski Snyder Ridge top to bottom nonstop, I'm going to tip my hat to you and ski it well. That's you're pinning your max heart rate guaranteed, and your thighs are burning. So that's kind of typical. When I was younger, you know, we'd go up there and try to get as many bowl laps as we could, and and stay up all day. But those days are kind of are kind of beyond me now.
Even with a cat, it's like a 40-minute hike up there to get from the top of the cat up, isn't it, to the top of the
Yeah,
bowl?
I think it's 700 or 800 vertical, and half the time the wind will practically pick you up and blow you off of that ridge. But it's a strenuous activity to get up there for sure.
A big difference from buttermilk.
It's different. It's different from all the mountains in Aspen. It's definitely an extreme mountain. Like I say, you're not going to get killed at Highlands like you could at Jackson or Squaw Valley. You're gonna it's a thrilling place to ski.
And they've done a lot of work there too, so it's the access is easier to a certain extent, and it's not that far out of town, so it's pretty easy to get to.
Oh, the Highlands is it, and you got the bus that drops you right off there. I mean, it's super simple to get around there. Yeah.
Now, given what you do for your enjoyment, and hiking, climbing, and skiing large peaks, do you ever do any backcountry skiing back around Aspen? What's that like?
I'll do backcountry skiing in Aspen, after co coincidentally at being a tax CPA. I won't go backcountry skiing in the Central Rockies until after April 15th. It's we don't get enough snow and we don't get the compaction that you need to safely backcountry ski around here. And people ask me all the time, what do you think of backcountry skiing in Aspen? And my answer is a pretty hard no. I don't do it until after April 15th. We just don't get the compaction in the snowpack, and you get the isothermic layers, and it's just far, far too risky. The avalanche danger in the Central Rockies in Colorado is about as unstable as it gets anywhere in the world.
Well, and
So
you've had the
it's a
train, you've had a lot of the training, and you use it on a regular basis, and you stay current on the training too, I'm sure.
You
That's
know, my
a
I
big
don't,
statement.
you know, I've never taken an avalanche course in my life. I've just lived it. And I understand the snow science. I'll read about it and kind of stay up on that. But the larger part of backcountry safety is not snow science, John. The larger component and the component that gets people killed is the mental component and the ego component, and that's a whole nother podcast, but it's poor decision making. It has nothing to do with the snowpack's pretty easy to read. Saying no when you've got that glistening slope staring you in the face and you've been climbing for 3 hours. Saying no, it's not right. That's the most difficult part of the process and staying safe in the backcountry.
Situational awareness is very important, and that is a big part of it, knowing when to say no. Let's go back to town for a minute. I'm going to sort of throw a couple things at you real quickly. What's the best pizza place in town, in your mind? You live there, you go out occasionally, I'm sure.
Not really sore, but kind of heartbreaking. And when I first moved back here in my early 20s, there were dozens of great places and local hangouts and places to go. And it's changed. It's when it's just be the and it's every all of the contemporary issues of Aspen are driven by one thing, and that is the high value of real property around here. The mom and pop's pizza place cannot afford the rent anymore, and as such, well, it's kind of a double-edged sword. The high cost of the leases doesn't allow those businesses to flourish, and the lack of housing has kind of pushed the people that would the patrons of those kinds of places pushed them out of Valley. So it's kind of a double whammy. It's very hard for an affordable local hangout to flourish in Aspen. It's kind of sad. I don't go out anymore. When I first moved back here in my early 20s, I never ate at home. I was always out having a beer and a pizza and a burger, but those days are gone. There really is no place for a local worker, the local working class to go out and enjoy a night out in Aspen. It's
That's my favorite place, closed down a couple years ago, the Red Onion. And a lot of them have gone. It's sad in some ways.
Well, I mean, you asked me, there's, you got the Hickory House is still thriving. But it's, I took a client in to have a hamburger and a Coke at the J Bar just about a month ago, thinking that it might be affordable. And you go in there and, a hamburger was $35 and a 6 ounce Coke was, $8. And, it kind of takes the fun out of going to a place like that. You can't do it on a frequent basis like I used to. And, those places have been replaced with really super high-end, fantastic restaurants, but you're $80, $85 for a steak. And I laugh when I did go out for a drink last Christmas, and I ordered a sapphire martini, and it was $38 before the tip. It's just like took a lot of the fun out of it,
It does. I feel like I've been robbed. Is Woody Creek Tavern still a thing out there? Is that any good anywhere?
But here again, it is expensive, but that is and I live out in Woody Creek, so I do go to the Woody Creek Tavern, and I love the Woody Creek Tavern. And to the owner's credit, what they did is they took the old seedy Woody Creek Tavern, gutted it, and put it all back together. You can't tell the difference, except it's pretty clean now. And the prices are about, the prices are a lot more than they used to be. But it's still a fun place to go.
So there are some other things to do in Aspen besides ski. I know that they've got paragliding over in a couple of the places. On
Oh yeah.
Ajax, they've got the paragliding. I think they do it at Highlands, and I think they do it at Snowmass. But what about snowshoeing or the arts? Are there other things like that that
Oh,
you like to do there?
it's there are so many things to do in Aspen. And it's like the old saying around here goes, I came to Aspen to go skiing, but I stayed here because the summers are so much fun. I know we're talking about skiing, but summers in Aspen are glorious. You a hot day will be, and there'll be maybe five of them in the summer will be 80, 85 degrees, but it stays a pretty consistent, 70, 75 degrees. Your evenings will drop down into the low 60s, maybe sometimes the high 50s, so you can sleep with your window open and you're not, sweltering in bed. And you've got golf, and it's a really active community. So there's a lot of mountain biking, a lot of road biking, fishing, river rafting, kayaking, rock climbing. I mean, you name it, you can do it here. And that's what keeps me here are the summers. Not really, the skiing keeps me here, but the summers are dynamite here.
Well, you can't ski for as long as you have without developing a philosophy about skiing. You've touched a little bit on some of it and how it transfers to others you interact with as you ski all over the world. Maybe you could talk about your philosophy on skiing and what it does for you and what you think it does for people, other people.
That's a complicated question, in my opinion, John, because to dive into that for me personally, you almost got to psychoanalyze yourself, because skiing has become so much a part of my identity, for better or for worse, mostly for better, but I'm sure there are some things that some decisions and some things that I've done in life that probably, if I didn't have skiing, I might not have done it. But for the most part, it's become a part of my identity, and I'm just passionate about it. I want my kids to ski. I love skiing with my kids. I love skiing with my wife, friends and family. And I love skiing alone, where you just get into a flow, a psychological flow, and it just makes you feel good. Is it the end all be all to happiness in life? Hardly. It isn't. But it is a part of my identity, and it's what I like to do, and until I find something else, I'm gonna keep the skis waxed and keep them ready to go, So, I'll tell you, I'll be 59 in a few days, and having this injury where I'm probably gonna miss the whole season. On one hand, my wife likes to point out, look at everything you've done in your life, and this is the first time you've ever been on the disabled list, which is true, which is, a testament to just beating really hard odds that I don't have any, that I've never been injured doing it. But it's hard. It's hard facing this winter, just jonesing to get up there and knowing that I'm not going to be able to probably do it. That's a really hard, bitter pill to swallow right now. But I'll tell you, it's making me hungry, and it's making me really, really appreciate, the years that I've had and the years that I'll have coming up doing it. I'm going to cherish it a little more,
You're going to be skiing Aspen until they pick you up off buttermilk face down.
That was pretty clever. That's a good point, John.
I may be there with you. What's your own favorite day? I think you hit on it, but if you were to just be able to take a day, go skiing, where would you go? How would you do it?
At this point, it would be a family day skiing. And that that you. When the kids are at a certain age, they love skiing with mom and dad, and then they go off on their own, and they don't want to be seen by mom and dad. But I've got two boys and a daughter. I've really a great day is going up Aspen Mountain, skiing hard with those guys. And I don't normally stop at the Sun Deck restaurant, but I'll always make sure we stop and go up and have a cup of coffee or a hot chocolate or something, and just stare out over the Elk Mountains. That's and we'll always invariably hook up with one of my brothers and their family. That's my ideal best day. That's like heaven for me.
That is about perfect. Family, friends are all part of the equation in skiing, and that's really, really important.
For
Steve,
sure.
I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about skiing Aspen. You might see Steve any day of the week on Aspen Mountain, not this year, but any other year, taking a few laps. You might see him in South America hiking up to a new adventure and maybe another record. You never know. Or you might see him at the Woody Creek Tavern. If you like our podcast, please share them and listen to perspectives on other areas like St. Anton, Palisades Tahoe, Jackson Hole, the Dolomites, and many others. Thanks for joining, and thank you to the Grits Band for the music.
We feel it, she feel it, we feel it. So round and round we go. We feel it, she feel it, we feel it.